From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill on The Miracle Hunter. And we've got a big feast day coming up next week, at least amongst miracle-minded Catholics, that being Our Lady of Mount Carmel. And that's on July 16th. That's one of the only cases of you see a Marian apparition celebrated in the calendar, the general Roman calendar. We have Our Lady of Lourdes, Fatima, Guadalupe, and Our Lady of Mount Carmel being apparition events recognized for the entire faithful. And so coming up on today's show, we're going to be talking about the Brown Scapular, and we've got a real expert, Steve Karakas. He's the founder of scapulars.com. He's going to be talking to us about the history of that great devotion and the Brown Scapular. And we'll also be joined today by Emily Jaminet. She's one of my favorite guests. We're going to be talking about her brand new book, Saints of the Sacred Heart. And she's got a book that looks at 10 of the most famous saints in history that promoted that devotion for the world. And so we'll be excited to talk with her about Saints of the Sacred Heart in just a little bit. And check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, on July 19th at 5 p.m. Central Time. Appropriately, the episode on the Sacred Heart will be airing, Paray Le Monial. I visit Paray Le Monial in France, where St. Margaret Mary Ellicoque first experienced dramatic visions of Jesus' Sacred Heart. I look at the origins of this cherished devotion. And for me, the recreations that were done in this program, where you see Jesus' heart on fire, are some of the best I've ever seen. So check this one out. Explore Paray Le Monial. And that's Saturday, July 19th at 5 p.m. Central Time. And also, They Might Be Saints airs on July 20th. My other program airs at 1:30 p.m. Central Time. They Might Be Saints, Venerable Mother Maria Kalpis. The cause for sainthood of Venerable Mother Maria Kalpis, the founder of the Sisters of St. Casimir in Chicago, and her inspirational work in education and healthcare led many to seek her intercession before God on their behalf. So check that one out, Venerable Maria Kalpis on They Might Be Saints. Later in the show, we're going to be looking at the Might Be Saint of the Day. For today, we've got Blessed David Gonson. He's an English martyr who died in the year 1541. And the 365 Days with Mary project is the Kasparov Icon of the Mother of God from Ukraine in the year 1840. And the question of the week is a hard one. Is there a downside to the Church's rigorous process of miracle investigation? I'll do my best to try to answer that one. And the miracle of the day is there's a Eucharistic miracle from Krakow in Poland from centuries ago that we'll be taking a look at. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And this isn't a miracle happening, but something that's very important in how the Church judges miracles. And we all might remember that last year this program dedicated a lot of time to some the new norms that came out from the Catholic Church. The old ones came out in 1978, and the newest ones came out in 2024, last year, and the norms for proceeding and judging alleged private revelation and apparitions. And they instituted some new guidelines, 6 possible categories of judgment, and they notably eliminated the ability for the Catholic Church to remove the approval of the supernaturality of a miraculous event. So for me, that was very interesting. But there was this new announcement this past week that there is a new document coming out of the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith about devotion to the Virgin Mary. So Cardinal Victor Manuel Fernandez, he announced a new text on various Marian themes. It's a follow-up to this 2024 New Norms document. The Dicastery, the guardian of the dogma of the Church, will soon publish a document on various Marian themes. And so the prefect, Cardinal Fernandez, made the announcement to journalists this past week, and it will clarify the new norms for studying supernatural phenomena in the Catholic Church. And I do think they need clarification. So over the past year, the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith has been evaluating numerous cases of mystical phenomena, apparitions, revelations, even more Eucharistic miracles, in light of a new, stricter method of investigation. At the end of the investigation, the Holy See may declare that it is not supernatural, but never the opposite. It can only grant a nihil obstat, nothing stands in the way, finding that the fact bears good fruit, but does not involve any negative aspects. And so these standards, which propose a 6 levels, a scale of approval, make it possible to highlight both positive and negative aspects of the same phenomenon. When we give the nihil obstat, Cardinal Fernandez said, it means that we see something very positive, a spirituality that does good, people who convert, he said in the press conference. But this recognition does not mean that everything that is said about this phenomena is without risk. And that's what he acknowledged. And when we look at all these phenomena as a whole, we see recurring problems. And he looks to bring balance to these issues, and the DDF is preparing the document that is almost finished, they say. And that's what the Cardinal has said. And I think what's interesting about the 6 scale, or the scale of 6, the levels of 6, is that there are 6 possibilities of judgments, and the Church has issued many judgments in this past year, but they've only fallen into 2 categories, the most positive one, nihil obstat, and the most negative one. So I think that that the non consta or constante non supernatural aetate is established as not supernatural. So even though they've had 6 categories, they've only exercised the option to use 2 of them. So I hope the document that comes out newly will address that. And so since the publication of the norms in 2024, the DDF has ruled on apparitions in Italy, in Trevignano, and the Madonna del Scoglia, Macchio, Maria Valtorta in France with Our Lady of Hill of Vosson, the Netherlands in Amsterdam, Croatia, Medjugorje, of course, Spain, Chandelida, and India, Vilankini, and Puerto Rico. So we've seen judgments spanning the entire globe, you might say. And so hopefully that this new document clears things up and cleans things up a little bit. I myself am very interested to see what this new document will say, but we'll report on it whenever it comes out in the next few months. You can see a link to this document announcing the document if you go to the Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter. One other bit of miracle news is that, of course, we have the upcoming canonization of Carlo Acutis. He, of course, is the millennial saint who will be canonized there in September after that long delay. But we see that in the United States, Archbishop Domenico Sorrentino, who's the Bishop of Assisi, and that, of course, is where Carlo Acutis is buried, he is actually on a national Carlo Acutis relic tour and on his way back to Italy, and he's going to be making a final stop to visit Blessed Carlo Acutis Parish and have Mass on July 15th with the pericardium, the heart relic of Carlo Acutis that will be at his canonization. And the last stop, I believe, is the only parish in the United States or North America named after Carlo Acutis. And so Archbishop Sorrentino is the curator of the tomb and the relics of Carlo Acutis in Assisi, and he's directly involved in the work towards the cause of his canonization. And so if people want to go to that Mass, people around Chicago, they can go to Blessed Carlo Acutis Parish, formerly St. Hedwig Parish, which is at 2226 North Hoyne Avenue in Chicago on July 15th at 7 p.m. Central Time. So people interested in attending that Mass for Carlo Acutis and to see the relic of his heart, they can do that on July 15th. Absolutely amazing to see that this relic is making its rounds here through the United States. Let's take a look at Catholic Pope Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer who writes in the fastest with the correct answer. And this past week we asked the question, who is the youngest female non-martyr saint, not one of the Fatima children? And some people might know this person, Venerable Antoinetta Nenolina Mayo. She was born on December 15th in 1930. She died in 1937 at the age of 6 from bone cancer. She's venerable. She hasn't been canonized yet, but heroic virtues have been. Someday she could be a saint. She might be a saint. And she's considered the youngest non-martyr ever to be formally considered for sainthood. And she was known for writing over 100 letters to Jesus from her hospital bed, offering her suffering with profound maturity. And so we might say that she isn't actually a saint yet, and that is exactly correct. She's a venerable, not a blessed or a saint, but the youngest saint, we might say, is Saint Rosa of Viterbo. She was born in 1233 in Viterbo, modern-day Italy, and she died in 1251 at the age of 17. and her feast day is September 4th, and canonized in the year 1454 by Pope Calixtus III. And so she's the real answer to this question, who is the youngest non-martyr saint who isn't one of the Fatima children, and that is St. Rose of Viterbo. Thanks for everybody who was writing in with this correct answer. And the question for this week is, today we're talking about Margaret Mary Ellicoke and the Sacred Heart. And her question was, who was her saintly spiritual director whose canonization miracle was found in the United States? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter@email.org. Send a message to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe you'll be the one with the right answers. And answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Emily Jaminet about her brand new book, Saints of the Sacred Heart. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Of course, in the month of June, we always talk about the month of the Sacred Heart, that being June itself. And of course, it's never a wrong time to talk about it. And just on the heels of that great month, we have a brand new book to discuss. It's called Saints of the Sacred Heart. It's a children's book that introduces children to the beauty of Jesus's Sacred Heart. And we're so excited about this book. It's beautifully illustrated and beautifully written by a friend of the show, and that is Emily Jaminet. Welcome back to the program today, Emily.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here. It's really an honor, and I'm super excited that we get to talk about the Sacred Heart and some amazing saints who also understood the profound and importantness of having a cultivating devotion to the heart of Jesus. So very excited.
Absolutely. I think that when most people think about saints of the Sacred Heart, their focus is only on one saint. And that's fine, of course, Saint Margaret Mary Ellicoke. But there are others who have had this similar connection to Jesus in this way and wanted to promote the devotion as well as she did. And so the book is fun because, as you might point out yourself, these weren't necessarily friends on earth, but these are heavenly friends, you might say. And telling children about the Sacred Heart through the lives of the saints is a wonderful way to do it. And so in the book, of course, we do talk about St. Margaret Mary. And would you say in your study of the Sacred Heart that she was the first saint who understood the importance of the Sacred Heart, or was she, or were there others who came before her?
Well, there were some saints that came before her, but what makes St. Margaret Mary Ellicoke so special is that Jesus appeared to her in 1673, and during these apparitions, he invited her to be the disciple of the Sacred Heart. And so she really took on this mission, this important endeavor to go forth and share the devotion in a very formal way. And so we, I think of her, just as that highlighted saint, but there are others that have gone before her, like St. John Youths, what a gift that he was, and even the founder of the Visitation Order as well. We're very blessed that he was able, St. Francis de Sales, to have devotion to the heart of Jesus.
Wonderful. We're talking today with Emily Jaminet about her brand new book from Sophia Institute Press, Saints of the Sacred Heart. It's a book for children, but anybody can learn from it, especially if you haven't known that there have been multiple saints throughout Catholic history who have promoted this great devotion. And one of the things I love about the book is the way that it's illustrated and laid out. I think that Tracy Christensen is the illustrator of the book, and they're absolutely beautiful, these illustrations. Talk a little bit about working with Tracy and how she brings to life some of these great saints.
Well, Michael, as a mother of seven, I just see such a value in teaching through images, teaching through beautiful books. And a lot of times, as this, reading those books year in and year out with my children, I would notice that we would spend a lot of time looking at the illustrations and talking about the illustrations. So when it was presented to me, this idea, this book, when I saw, some of the work she's done, I knew right away that she would be the right illustrator for the book, because it's not just about learning about the lives of the saints, but what's really important, I believe, is the discussion between the parent or the teacher, the adult, or even if you're reading through it yourself, the points to ponder on each saint. Because what we desire through this book, and as you know, on the path to holiness as Catholic Christians, is that our lives change through looking at the lens and the lives of the saints, that we're inspired to be open to grace and to have a heart similar to the ones that they have. And so that's really, it was just an absolute privilege to work with her. And I'm inspired by her illustrations, and hopefully others will be inspired going through this this book as a devotional or even as a children's book.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Emily Giovanette about her brand new book, Saints of the Sacred Heart. And you can pick this one up from Sophia Institute Press or anywhere Catholic books are sold. And of course, we talked about St. Margaret Mary, the famous apostle of the Sacred Heart, you might say, but also her her confessor, who helped in sort of validating these visions, you might say, or helping to convince others or to show that these were true visions of Jesus to St. Margaret Mary. He is also a saint. So this is one of these fun combinations where we have sainted friends or sainted associates. That's St. Claude de Colombert. What can you tell us about him?
Well, what's really special, and you and I have both been to the town of Père-Lémoniel, is that they both have chapels very close to each other. So they were earthly friends. But what was amazing is he did serve as her spiritual director for about 18 months and then went on as a Jesuit priest to serve in England and came back after some time in prison and a difficult assignment because it was very anti-Catholic at the time. But what was important, I think, to highlight to young children is that he said, you know, give me a heart for true friendship. And he was making reference, St. Claude, to Jesus Christ and this importance of friendship. So as you go through the book, you kind of start to understand, you know, I want my heart to be merciful. I want my heart to be loving. I want my heart to, you know, be a true friend to Jesus. So I really have come to appreciate this saint that many don't know of, but I think it's important, especially talking to children, the gift of spiritual friendship, the gift of a spiritual, for her confessor, and really helping to validate what was taking place in the wider circle in her visitation community, and then also within the Catholic Church.
And what about St. Francis de Sales? He's a famous saint, and of course he had that devotion as well to the Sacred Heart. Tell us a little bit about how St. Francis fits into this puzzle.
Well, I was very honored to actually go and visit his church as well when we went to France a year ago. And the thing that was so striking is that his understanding of the Visitation Order also was significant for St. Margaret Mary down the road, but his motto was live Jesus. And so this idea of live Jesus, you know, living virtuously, practically living out your faith, so that, you know, it's a reminder that we are called for everyday holiness. And that's something when you're talking to children, it's important that we remind them that, you know, we need to tend to our heart well, that we need to recognize that holiness begins in our heart. And to become great saints or great sinners often begins in the ponderings and the thoughts within that rest deep within our heart. So kind of this awakening, this important awakening of helping us to see Christ in everything. And what's fun about St. Francis de Sales and his writings is he also uses some really good humor as well. So I think it's important to expose him to children.
Wonderful. And I'll quiz you on one more saint. I was excited to see St. Francis Xavier Cabrini. Of course, she's got her Chicago connections. I'm a Chicago guy. So I was happy to see St. Francis Xavier Cabrini listed amongst your Saints of the Sacred Heart. How does she fit in?
Well, I thought she was such an important saint because she really was one of us, an American saint, and she had a great heart of a teacher. She had this desire as she came here from Italy to the United States to tend to many of the immigrants from Italy, the children, and as she lived from 1850 to 1917. So to present to the children this beautiful role model who actually didn't want to come to America. She wanted to go to China, but as a result, she was obedient to the Holy Father. She came here and tended to the poorest of poor, setting up schools, orphanages, and even helping with a hospital. So I thought she was a great saint in the discussion questions, talking about being a missionary and how we can go forth and be a missionary. And a lot of times, you know, as you know, Michael, it's very small actions, such as being a missionary of love and kindness in our school, sharing our faith with those who don't know it. Even passing on little prayer cards is a great way to be a missionary. So I think she not only is a wonderful saint, but she also had an amazing devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus as well.
Wonderful. And you mentioned in some of the questions, the book is wonderful because it invites us to meet the saint. It's sort of a short biography of the saint and a beautiful illustration so we can see what they might have looked like. But it also has different ways to connect with the saint, whether it's be questions or prayers. Talk a little bit about the format of the book and how that children of any age could engage with the book this way.
Well, what's really neat about the book is I wanted it to also serve as a possible novena for a family, a classroom, you know, to go through each day taking just one saint in particular. And so it's St. Margaret Mary Alico plus 9 for those making it a novena. And then on each page, I have just a short, it's called Offering of the Heart. And under the Offering of the Heart, it gives you 1 to 2 discussion questions to have with the child. So as we're looking, for example, at St. Francis Xavier Cabrini, you know, the question is, what is one thing you can do today to help solve the problems of your community or even country? And so a child might say, you know, the one thing I can do today is bring water down to our local shelter. You know, that might be the one thing. But helping children to see that not only preserving their hearts and making it holy, but there might be some small steps that they can do. And so I really hope and desire that that parent, that educator, has those questions with, has time to discuss the questions with children so that they can grow closer to Christ and hopefully better live out the will of Christ in their home and onto the community as well.
Wonderful. And we're so grateful to you, Emily Jaminet, talking to us about your brand new book from Sophia Institute Press, Saints of the Sacred Heart, where we look at 12 different heavenly friends, you might say, who have promoted devotion to the Sacred Heart. What is your hope for this book for people who want to learn about the Sacred Heart, who already have the devotion? What is your hope for children and otherwise who pick up this book?
Well, as you know, I've written other books on the Sacred Heart as well, and I just felt like the importance of us as formed Catholics continuing to pass on the faith well to the next generation, the torch of faith, and through that, through children's books, is a great way to do that. If it's your grandchildren, your school children, your PSR classroom, or even, most importantly, our very own children and of course, grandchildren. So I'm excited to see the fruits of this book, and may the love of Jesus impact each one of our hearts, change our hearts, may we receive that love and share it with others. So it's a devotion that continues to be strong in the line of my family, and my desire is that it grows all around the world.
Wonderful. The name of the book is Saints of the Sacred Heart from Emily Jaminet, and people can pick it up from Sophia Institute Press or where anywhere Catholic books are sold. Thank you so much, Emily, for joining us on this program and shedding some light again on the Sacred Heart of Jesus. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
God bless. That was Emily Jaminet talking to us about her brand new book, Saints of the Sacred Heart, available from Sophia Institute Press. But we need to take a short break. But when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love getting your questions. I love hearing what people are thinking about. And of course, people send me lots of interesting emails. I've got the most interesting inbox in America. I think a lot of strange things in there. But I also love answering questions in person. And so when I give talks at maybe 20 different Catholic parishes or conferences or shrines throughout the year, and I always give a
45-minute presentation about miracles, Eucharistic miracles, or Marian apparitions, or how the church investigates the miraculous. And then I answer questions, and I love to hear what people are thinking about. And so people can actually invite me to their parish to speak. If you go to the website of miraclehunter.com and click on the contact tab, you can send me a message that way. But for people who want a question answered, they can send a message to questions@miraclehunter.com. And we've got a good one this week. It says, how do you feel about the church's cautious approach to declaring miracles? Does this careful scrutiny enhance their credibility? Or might it sometimes discourage belief by making miracles seem too rare or distant? Thank you, John. Well, thanks, John, for your question. And it's a good one, I guess. The question is, when the church is so cautious and careful about miracles, is that a good thing or a bad thing? And so, for me personally, I know that miracles do seem rare. Miracles happen all around the world every single day, big ones and small ones. But the stories of the very big ones, they kind of trickle out, and we don't hear many of them. Maybe this is the only show that pays special attention to all the miracles throughout history. But the question is, when the miracles are so difficult to be declared miraculous, and now that the Catholic Church doesn't even declare anything supernatural, is that a problem, making belief in miracles harder? And I think that when it comes to healing miracles, that's a type of miracle that everybody's sort of on board with, Protestants and Catholics and otherwise. We still do see the church declaring those to be supernatural events. And so we see that in canonization causes, of course. And they use this Lambertini criteria where it must be a serious condition, not liable to go on its own. It must be instantaneous, complete, and lasting. And there can be no medical treatment that relates to the cure. And or at Lourdes, when there's 72 miracles out of the many thousands that have been reported there. And so when we look at that Lambertini criteria and how strict it is and how it's centuries old, should the church loosen up its requirements? And my answer to that is always no. I think it's wonderful that the church is so strict with miracles, because anytime anything passes muster, you have the doubters and the atheists and the naysayers, and they say, well, that's not really a miracle. Well, I think it has to be, the toughest criteria, because then when the Catholics jump on board and the bishops declared or Rome acknowledges it, then it's a big deal. It's a real miracle, and we can all embrace it and celebrate it. So I actually like the church's very serious stance on miracles and its strict rules. So maybe other people are different on this one, and we'd love to see more things declared miracles, but I think the church's position on these things is just great, especially considering we don't have to believe in them anyway. If we don't find them helpful to our faith, we can safely ignore these modern miracles anyway. So I think the church handles it absolutely perfectly. So thanks, John, for your question. If you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question in the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary Project. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the day's date. We all know Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th, or Fatima, May 13th, but believe it or not, there's a different Marian devotion for each and every day of the calendar year. And so for today's date, we've got the Kasparov icon of the Mother of God from Kherson in Ukraine in the year 1840. In 1840, late one night in a village on Dnieper, Mrs. Kasparov was praying before her old and darkened icon when she saw an illumination of the vestiges of the mother and child. The icon was soon restored to its original beauty, and miracles of healing began to occur, and devotion to this icon spread, resulting in an annual procession in the town with it on the Feast of the Ascension. After the Crimean War, the procession moved from the city of Odessa, which went to an annual rotation between Odessa, Kherson, and the towns of Nikolaev and Kasparovka. On July 2nd, June 29th in the old calendar, the icon's last day in Kherson is celebrated on this feast, along with October 1st and the Wednesday after Easter. And it is the Kasparov icon of the Mother of God from Kherson in Ukraine in the year 1840. For more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can go to the website 365dayswithmary.com, pick up the book, download the free app from the iOS App Store, or you can go to the Facebook page 365 Days with Mary and join any of the 10,000 other followers who get a new devotion to Mary each and every day of the calendar year. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. We do this every week where we talk about a miracle occurring on the day's date in some year in Christian history. And so in early July of the year 1345 in Krakow, in Poland, they're witnessed by a thief, townspeople, and clergy. There was a glowing host. The story goes that in 1345 in Krakow, a thief stole a consecrated host from a church and attempted to hide these hosts, but they began to emit a bright light that revealed their hiding place, and the hosts were recovered and returned in a solemn procession after days of prayer, and it strengthened Eucharistic devotion in the city and, some might say, the world. And that is the Eucharistic miracle of Krakow from July in the year 1345. And each week we'll be reporting on a different miracle of the day. Let's take a look at the sainthood news. We do this every week where we talk about those people on the path to sainthood and the news that's coming out. And this lines up with my efforts with They Might Be Saints, where I talk about people on the path to sainthood, be it servants of God, venerables, or blesseds, before they have all their miracles and are declared saints by Rome. And so every month or so, the Holy Father releases some new promulgations of decrees. So on February 20th, last month, the Holy Father received an audience, Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, the prefect of the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints. And during this audience, the Supreme Pontiff authorized this dicastery to promulgate a decree regarding the martyrdom of the servant of God, Manuel Izquierdo Izquierdo, a diocesan priest, and 58 companions of the Diocese of Jaén in Spain. He was killed between 1936 and 38 out of hatred for the faith in different places in Spain in the context of this persecution. So he was killed on a specific date, of course, Manuel Izquierdo and 59 companions, but the other 59 were killed in that span of 1936 to 1938. And the martyrdom was carried out by revolutionaries who moved by anti-religious and anti-Christian sentiments. They massacred numerous priests, religious, and lay people, and desecrated and pillaged churches, places of worship, and sacred objects were destroyed. The hatred of the faith of the guerrillas, driven by the atheist propaganda, is simply demonstrated by the general violence against the church, its ministers, and many of its faithful. So that's Manuel Izquierdo Izquierdo and 59 companions in Jaén in Spain. For more information on this saint, this group of martyrs, you can go to theymightbesaints.com. For today's Might Be Saint of the Day, we always look at for somebody whose feast day or death anniversary lines up exactly to the day's date. And for today, we've got Blessed David Gonson, an English martyr, in the year 1541. And his memorial is today, on July 12th. Now, he was the son of a British vice admiral and a member of the English nobility. He was a lifelong layman in the Apostle Vicariate of England, and he was a Knight of the Order of St. John of Jerusalem. He was imprisoned in the Tower of London and then marshaled and finally executed for refusing to acknowledge King Henry VIII as the head of the church, and he is known as one of the martyrs of England and Wales. And he was hanged, drawn, and quartered on July 12, 1541, in Southwark, London. And he was declared venerable by Pope Pius XI in 1929. And of course, in the decree of martyrdom, he was declared blessed also in December of 1929 by Pope Pius XI. And that is today's They Might Be Saint of the Day, Blessed David Gonson. With one miracle, he will be declared Saint David. And for those people interested in the program, They Might Be Saints, you can pick up my book, They Might Be Saints, from EWTNRC, Religious Catalog, or check out the series, which airs every week. And for this week, on Sunday, July 20th at 1:30 p.m. Central Time, They Might Be Saints, Venerable Mother Maria Kalpis, the cause for Venerable Mother Maria Kalpis, founder of the Sisters of St. Casimir in Chicago. Her inspirational work in education and healthcare led many to seek her intercession before God on their behalf. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Steve Karakas about Our Lady of Mount Carmel. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter. On EWTN, here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. On July 16th, we have a big feast day in our Catholic Church. At least it is amongst miracle-minded Catholics. We have the big Marian devotion, the Marian Apparition Day of Our Lady of Mount Carmel. And for a lot of people, they know about this name of the famous devotion, and perhaps they know about that brown scapular. But they might not know where it all comes from, and what are the origins of this devotion. And believe it or not, it ended up coming to us from England, of all places, even though we might say its origins are elsewhere. We're so excited today to shed some light on this fascinating and popular devotion, that of the brown scapular and that of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, with Steve Caracas. He is the Catholic husband and author and founder of scapulars.com. That's scapulars.com is where people can go to find out more about the Our Lady of Mount Carmel devotion. And we're so excited for Steve to join us. Thank you so much, Steve, for joining us on today's program.
Oh, thank you so much. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you, and this is a big feast day for a lot of people, Our Lady of Mount Carmel. It's one of people's favorite Marian devotions, and might be one that not everybody knows all the details about. Of course, we might know about Fatima Lourdes and Guadalupe a little bit more, but when we talk about Our Lady of Mount Carmel, that being a Marian apparition story, what are the actual origins of the Carmelites or this devotion?
Sure. So that's a fascinating story, because the Carmelites established themselves on Mount Carmel in the Holy Land. And there was a long devotion even before the Carmelites arrived. But during the Crusades, during the Christian kingdom in the Holy Land, the Carmelites established themselves as an order dedicated to Our Lady Star of the Sea, which overlooks the Mediterranean Sea, Mount Carmel does. And after the Holy Land was lost, there was, more difficulties. They had to move the order, and they were given land in England. And so they moved the entire order to England. And there was a question of whether or not another order was really necessary, because this is the time of the Dominicans and Franciscans, and there were other newer orders that were very popular in Europe. And they thought, why do we need another one? And so in order to, so St. Simon Stock, who was the prior general, Father Simon Stock at the time, he was asking Our Lady, he was praying to Our Lady and asking for a special protection, a special divine protection over the order in exchange for complete loyalty. And this is very important, because Our Lady came to him in response. He wrote the Flos Carmeli prayer, which is still prayed every day by the Carmelites. And he wrote this prayer and promised his complete loyalty in exchange for special protection. And she appeared to him and gave him a brown scapular, which is kind of a larger piece of cloth, goes over the shoulders. It hangs down front and behind the habit that they were wearing. And she said, take this as a sign of protection for your order. Whosoever dies wearing this shall not suffer eternal fire. And so it became a very well-known at the time, and very quickly, a very popular pious devotion among the faithful. They would actually take little pieces of the Carmelite scapular after it was, it was worn out, and then they would put a new one on. They would take the old ones and cut out little miniatures and tie strings to them and hang them over their neck, just to basically to associate themselves with the spirituality of the Carmelites. And it became so popular that the Holy Father granted this as a special protection to all the faithful who would wear this devotional scapular. And so that's kind of the beginnings of the scapular story from the year 1251.
Amazing. We're talking today with Steve Caracas, the founder of scapulars.com, about Our Lady of Mount Carmel, whose feast day is next week on July 16th. And when we talk about this scapular, I think that this has become a great sacramental, a great sign of devotion for many people. And what is the, if you had to explain to a non-Catholic or a new Catholic, newly converted Catholic, what's the idea behind wearing a scapular? How would you explain that?
Sure. So it's a two-way promise. So when St. Simon Stock promised complete loyalty to the Blessed Mother, what he was promising, what complete loyalty to her is staying close to her son, close to the sacraments, remaining in a state of grace. So really, it's devotion to Christ himself through her special protection. And because all grace comes to us by God through Jesus, Jesus came to us through Mary, all grace comes to us in this way, even to this day. And so it's a special protection. It's a grace from God, the grace of protection. And so what happens now is we think, okay, so I need to do my part when I wear the scapular. I need to be completely loyal and stay close to the sacraments, close to Jesus, in exchange for this divine protection in life and in death. And so sometimes we say, well, wait a second, now the burden is on me. I got to do my part. That's the hard part. But the beauty of any sacramental, and especially this sacramental, is that when we wear the scapular devoutly, God gives us what we call actual grace, which is his way of helping us hold up our end of the bargain. So he always keeps his promises, and then he helps us keep our promises by giving us actual grace. And this is the kind of the heart of the devotion of the scapular. It's not a magic charm. You know, we don't believe in charms. we believe in the grace of God, and we are saved by the grace of God. And all of our life and our devotion and our eternity is dependent on the grace of God.
Absolutely right. We're talking today with Steve Karakas about scapulars and Our Lady of Mount Carmel. And I think one of the interesting things about scapulars, and I think there are multiple colors of scapulars across the board. I've seen green ones and red ones and blue ones and brown ones and black ones and white ones. But we're talking today about Our Lady of Mount Carmel, which is the brown scapular. And one of the things that's fascinating about this scapular as it's been handed down in Catholic pious tradition or otherwise is the Sabbatine privilege. And that is one of the reasons I'm sure you're motivated to say that it's not a magic charm, because there is the belief among some Catholics, you might say, that if you die wearing the brown scapular, this is an automatically get-out-of-jail-free pass or a free shot straight up to heaven. Talk a little bit about the Sabbatine privilege, where we get that idea from, and what is the intent or the meaning behind this idea that those who wear the scapular will be protected.
Sure. So, we like to say that scapular is not a get out of hell free card. It's not like you can do whatever you want and still, you know, kind of cheat your way into heaven. That doesn't work. You have to hold up your end of the promise, right? You have to remain close to the sacraments, close to Christ. So the Sabbatine privilege is actually something, it's a secondary devotion that was added by the church, about 100 years later, within 100 years, that said that those who devoutly wear the brown scapular and pray the little office of the Blessed Virgin, or if your spiritual director says you can pray the rosary in exchange for that every day, and you stay close to the sacraments, as I mentioned, you remain in a state of grace, then you will be delivered from purgatory on the Saturday after your death. And so it's known as the Sabbatine privilege, because it was the Sabbath or the Saturday privilege. And there's nothing unusual about this, and there's nothing mysterious about it so much as it is the treasury of the grace that God granted to the church, right? The church has the treasury of graces, and it's simply opening the treasury in this particular way, in this particular devotion, to those who have this devotion. And again, it's not a charm, it's a devotion of grace.
Wonderful. We're talking today with Steve Karakas about the brown scapular and Our Lady of Mount Carmel. And I think that's it's a great devotion that people around the world are connected to this and celebrate it in a big way on July 16th, the feast day of Our Lady of Mount Carmel. And Steve, I know that you are the founder of scapulars.com, a website which promotes this devotion. Talk a little bit about when people go to the site, what they'll encounter.
Sure. So our thought was, I mean, I've been wearing the scapular since I was 18. I was actually heading out to Alaska, working in the Bering Sea. It was a very dangerous job. I thought, I need all the protection I can get, whether it's, you know, material protection, divine protection. So I started wearing the scapular that day, and I really haven't taken it off since. But over the years, I keep wearing through the scapulars. I keep breaking them. You know, they wear out. I'm now married. I've been married 30 years. I have 9 children, and you can't hardly imagine how many broken scapulars we have with all of our boys, you know, all their activities, all the sports. And I'm burying them in the corners of the yard and, you know, very respectfully putting them in places. And I was complaining for 20 years about the poor quality of the scapulars. Why do they always break? Why are they uncomfortable? What, you know? So after 20 years of complaining and asking other people to make a better one, and no one did, I thought, okay, Lord, I'll just do it myself. So I spent a few years actually trying to redesign, trying to make trying to solve all the common objections or problems with the scapular. So we make them super strong with great stitching. We actually redesigned the interior so that it works. It stitches really well, and we designed it in such a way that it has a pocket in it so that if you have a special devotion, you know, special medal that you want to wear or crucifix, you can actually, instead of putting it on the cord of the scapular, which is very common, which wears through the cord, you can actually stick it inside the scapular and it doesn't wear through anything. And we use the highest quality wool we can find in the world, merino wool, so that it's, you know, it's there, it's high quality, it's comfortable. And the great thing about it for me is that I'm not looking for the cheapest product. I'm not looking for the most expensive product. I'm looking for the best value. What's going to be the best value over time? So we wanted to make a scapular that was really worthy of the devotion. So we use the highest quality products we can find in the world, and they last way longer than anything costing you less. You know, you don't have to replace them very often, like maybe once every 10 years or something. At the website, you can read about the history and how we designed it and what the devotion is about. And, you know, we ship all over the world. We give them out free to all priests and religious. There's a page on the site for that. We also give them free to young pilgrims who go on pilgrimage to the World Youth Days and to other places. So there's kind of a mission that goes along with it as well.
Wonderful. And talk a little bit about those people who get a scapular from you at scapulars.com or otherwise. It's important to have the scapular blessed. Why is that?
Oh, so the very interesting thing about the scapular devotion is it's a little bit different than other sacramentals, and that it's a miniature of the Carmelite habit. So you need to be invested in the scapular. It needs to be, you need to have a prayer of investment, which is actually a prayer that falls on the wearer, so it falls on you, and then you receive the scapular, you put it on. You can still bless the scapular, but the investment prayer is for the one who wears it. And just like a habit, if you join an order, you're only invested once, and when your habit wears out, you just get another one. It's the same with the scapular. You need to be invested once in your life, and then the prayer, the investment prayer remains on you for life, as long as you're wearing a scapular.
And if you had to describe that prayer, is it a long one or a short prayer?
No, in fact, it's relatively short. It actually comes in a little prayer card with every scapular we send out, and you can find it online, and most priests know it, maybe not by heart, but they can certainly find it quickly because many priests and Catholic deacons also have invested, you know, people over the years.
If you're willing, would you read the prayer for us today?
So when a priest invests a new person in the scapular, there's a vestment prayer. It comes with the prayer card of each scapular, and the priest will say, "Lord, show us your kindness and mercy," and we respond, "And grant us your salvation." Priest says, "Lord, hear my prayer," and we respond, "And let my cry come to you." Priest says, "The Lord be with you and with your spirit." Then the priest says the prayer. Let us pray. O Lord Jesus Christ, Savior of mankind, by your right hand sanctify this scapular, which your servant will devoutly wear for the love of you and of your mother, the Blessed Mother of Mount Carmel. By her intercession, may he or she, the wearer, be protected from the wickedness of the enemy and persevere in your grace until death. You who live and reign forever and ever, amen. Then the priest sprinkles holy water on the scapular and on the person, and then he says, receive this blessed scapular and ask the Most Holy Virgin that by her merits it may be worn with no stain of sin and may protect you from all harm and bring you into everlasting life, amen. Then the investiture happens. The priest will put the scapular on you, and he says, by the power granted to me, I admit you to a share in all the spiritual works performed with the merciful help of Jesus Christ by the religious of Mount Carmel. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Then the priest again sprinkles holy water on the person enrolled. And that's the whole investiture prayer.
Wow, amazing. Thank you so much for reading that and going through the process. I'm sure there's lots of people out there who wonder what exactly all goes into it. So we're so grateful to you, Steve Karakas, for being on the show today, talking to us about scapulars.com, a place where you can pick up your own bronze scapular as it relates to the devotion to Our Lady of Mount Carmel, celebrated next week, coming up on July 16th. And what is your hope for people who have an interest in this devotion? That what is your hope for them if they pick up a scapular and they engage with that devotion in a very real way? What can they expect to see?
So So my hope is that the scapular devotion goes hand in hand with the rosary, that those who understand and the rosary devotion would also wear the scapular devoutly, because the two devotions have a special place in the life of the church. And so, and this is something that even both of these devotions, the origins are a little bit shrouded in the mystery of time, because it was so long ago. There are some question marks people bring up about the origin stories. However, as you mentioned, Fatima, during the Great Miracle of the Sun on October 13th in 1917, Our Lady appeared to the children as Our Lady of Mount Carmel,
that's right,
holding the child Jesus, handing a scapular to the children, and you know, encouraging them to wear it. She also then appeared as Our Lady of the Rosary, which she had previously done that year, encouraging them to pray the rosary every day. And Sister Lucia always said the rosary and the scapular are inseparable. And over time, John Paul II really revived the rosary devotion, brought that back to into the minds and consciousness of the faithful all over. And I think the scapular is a little bit behind, but it really needs to go hand in hand with the rosary. So our hope and our intent is to help revive the scapular devotion and have it as widespread as the faithful around the entire world.
Absolutely. We're so grateful to you, Steve Karakas, founder of Scapulars.com, talking to us about your great ministry, spreading the word on the Brown Scapular Devotion and devotion to Our Lady of Mount Carmel. We wish you a happy Feast of Our Lady of Mount Carmel coming right up. Thank you so much, Steve, for joining us on today's program.
Oh, thank you so much. Great to be here.
And that was Steve Karakas talking to us about scapulars. Check him out at scapulars.com, and you can find out more about the Our Lady of Mount Carmel devotion and the Brown Scapular. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Emily Jaminet, talking to us about Saints of the Sacred Heart, and Steve Karakas talking to us about scapulars.com and the devotion to Our Lady of Mount Carmel. Check out my series Explore with the Miracle Hunter on July 19th at 5 p.m. Central Time. I visit Paray-le-Monial in France, where St. Margaret Mary Alacoque first experienced visions of Jesus' Sacred Heart. I explore the origins of this cherished devotion. Check that out. Explore with the Miracle Hunter, Paray-le-Monial, Saturday at 5 p.m. Central Time. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.